You know, I had the thought recently that freedom is contagious. Just like the phrase came to my mind. And then on a whim, I Googled that phrase, freedom is contagious. And of course, it was already out there. Somebody else had already said it. In fact, several people had already said it. I discovered various iterations of it, but the one that really got my attention was the former Republican governor of Colorado. Governor Bill Owens, he served as governor of Colorado from 1999 to 2007. He said the exact same thing. In fact, his full quote was this. He said, freedom is contagious. That's why despots fear it so much. What a great quote. Okay, but what does it mean? Well, what it means is freedom in times of oppression, when the dark clouds of government overreach are raining on people's lives, that one person, even just one, who is willing to take a step out, risks their own security, stand in the face of tyranny, well, it inspires others. Which then inspires others, which then cascades, and the calls for freedom can be far more contagious than any natural virus. And sometimes it's just a word. Sometimes it's a writing. Sometimes it's an action or a call to arms. Sometimes it's just a look in the crowd that one person gives to another that both know means I've got your back, let's do this. And there's images in my mind that come when I think of the phrase, freedom is contagious, like of the one man who stood in front of a tank in the center of Tiananmen Square in China, just stood there, galvanized the whole world. Well, look, I believe that we're in a fight right now, a fight worth having, by the way, a fight that will determine what kind of America we actually want. I mean, do we want an America that will just go along to get along? Standing for everything and therefore standing for nothing, because that's the hinge point we're standing at right now. We are at an inflection. We are at a turning. We are at a fork in the proverbial road. So I ask you again, what kind of America do we actually want? Andrew Jackson, who became president, prior to that, he rallied up a ragtag group of militia and buccaneers and townsfolk to defend New Orleans near the end of the War of 1812. He soundly defeated a far superior British force. He is quoted as saying this about that fight. He said, who are we? And for what are we going to fight? Are we the titled slaves of George III, the military conscripts of Napoleon the Great, or the frozen peasants of the Russian Tsar? No, said Andrew Jackson. He said, we are the freeborn sons of America, the citizens of the only republic now existing in the world, and the only people on earth who possess rights, liberties, and property which they dare call their own. Strong words, man. His words and his actions in that campaign actually fired up the whole nation and propelled him to the presidency. Well, that's Andrew Jackson, but you know, sometimes it's a common man who rises up. Other times it's a leader who speaks over the fears of his people to provide reassurance and inspire confidence. But yeah, freedom can be contagious. And isn't it amazing how one person can say or do just the right thing and turn a tide of depression into an inspiring moment, even an inspiring movement? So I heard a story yesterday that I had never heard before, a story that made my 60-year-old self stand up a little straighter, made my crickety neck and my old muscles feel like they could still do some more than I already pushed them to do. The story that I heard is about an old soldier who saw a fight worth having. It's a true story. An old soldier who, despite his age, stood in the gap. I saw a meme one time. It said, "Fear the old man who survives in a young man's world." Well, that could never be more true than the story of the guy I'm talking about, Samuel Whittemore. There's a marker to Samuel Whittemore in Arlington, Massachusetts. It doesn't give you the whole story, but it does tell you something about the man who became known as the oldest colonial fighter in the American Revolutionary War. Whittemore was born in 1696. And if you're quick with math, you're already figuring out he was an old guy by the time the Declaration of Independence was signed in 1776. He was also a fighter. Over the century, he had fought over the various small conflicts and even the French and Indian War that all raged through the colonies over time. But he was a colonial. He was not a loyalist to the crown. He was absolutely 100% for the idea of a new nation. On April 19th of 1775, at 78 years old, Whittemore was out working in his fields. By the way, let that sink in, that at 78 years old, he was out working in his fields. Okay, but Whittemore saw British forces. They were marching back from Boston, from the battles of Lexington and Concord. Whittemore, the old guy, he loaded up his musket and two black powder dueling pistols. He took up a position behind a stone wall. And accounts of the day say that Whittemore yelled to other colonials that if I can only be the instrument of killing one of my country's foes, I shall die in peace. Well, 78-year-old Samuel Whittemore confronted the British soldiers. He fired his first shot with his musket, killed one British soldier. He then drew his two pistols and killed two more, but he wasn't done. He was danger close. He had no time to reload, so Samuel Whittemore, at 78 years old, drew his sword and attacked the British troops by himself. He was shot in the face. He was bayoneted several times. He was left for dead. The story I read said that colonial forces found him later, bloodied and trying to load his musket to go back for more. His clothes were full of bullet holes and stab wounds, and the wounds, well, they were so severe that Whittemore was not expected to survive. But I'm going to tell you right now, that old guy, he was as hard as woodpecker lips. At a time and a place when the average life expectancy for men in the American colonies was just 38 years old, that 78-year-old warrior survived those wounds and lived for nearly two more decades to the ripe old age of 96. The New London Journal, I saw a copy of it. The New London Journal reported on his death in 1793, and it said, quote, "He survived to see the complete overthrow of his enemies and his country to enjoy all the blessings of peace and independence." Y'all, what an epic story. Why haven't I heard about him before? But what I do know is this. Even with his extreme story being so epic in scale, what we saw there was one old guy who saw something that was worth fighting for. He saw more than just his personal stake in the events of the day. He saw something far greater. Something so great that he was willing to stand alone at great cost and give all that he had to fix the world he lived in and inspire a whole lot of people because of it. He was born in 1696, Samuel Whittemore. He fought in every war, every fight over the next 100 years to shape the beginnings of this country. He had an amazing story, and I hope that I can have half the eulogy that's strong as his. But listen, the physical fight that Samuel Whittemore put up for the ability to see our nation become free and prosperous, it's still ongoing. It may not always be a physical fight, but it is still a fight nonetheless, and it requires to this day that Americans be willing to step into the fray. Because here's the thing, folks, there's a battle for our society. I believe it is. There's a battle for our society. It's good against evil. It's left against right. It's freedom versus slavery in the spiritual and moral sense. And the left does not want us to be united. But my lovely wife always says there's more of us than there are of them. And I believe that. And there are people who are willing to rise up and speak to the moment. And we need them. And they've happened throughout our history. Take Martin Luther King. He was not of noble stature or impressive social standing, but he stood and he spoke. And the timing was perfect. And he changed his world. "I Have a Dream" may be just the most quoted words of all time and certainly among the most inspiring speeches mankind has ever heard. King was the youngest man to ever win the Nobel Peace Prize. He spoke out about civil rights and his vision of an America living in racial harmony. One of the most powerful lines from that speech was, "I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." Or what about Menachem Begin? Menachem Begin, in 1948, the fledgling nation of Israel was preparing for an attack by Arab armies, far outnumbered, surrounded, and Begin spoke to the Israeli people on the radio, preparing them for war with the Arabs. A frightened and terrified nation of people just 3 years after the Holocaust, and Begin was able to muster up a national collective courage. He brought strength to his people through his words. He said this, he said, "We shall go our way into battle. And we shall be accompanied by the spirit of millions of our martyrs, our ancestors, tortured and burned for their faith, our murdered fathers and butchered mothers, our murdered brothers and strangled children. And in this battle," he said, "we shall break the enemy and bring salvation to our people, tried in the furnace of persecution, thirsting only for freedom, for righteousness, for justice." And his amazing words. You know what they are? They're a leader speaking to the moment. And I can't go down this road without mentioning somebody like Great Britain's Prime Minister in World War II, Sir Winston Churchill. He was responsible for delivering inspiring speeches that rallied the pride of the nation as they were being bombed relentlessly. He led a tired and bruised nation into victory over tyranny. His speeches to the nation were epic. His blood, toil, tears, and sweat speech is the stuff of legend. One of the best lines from that speech is, "You ask what is our policy? I can say it is to wage war. By sea, land, and air, with all of our might, with all the strength that God can give us to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark, lamentable catalog of human crime." We may not be, y'all, in that deep of a trial right now. We may not be in a physical war. There may not be bombs dropping on us. We might not be having to march for the simple right to exist. But I believe that even though there are no tanks, no bombs, no foreign enemies marching on our land, I think that we have seen yet an ever-increasing attempt to dissuade the people of this great country from exercising the rights that have been enumerated on their behalf in the Constitution. I believe that. You see, there's good folks out there, though, who are still willing to stand up, people who are willing to take a stand for their actual rights, and they are inspiring when they do that. And we have to take those stands, like the good folks at the Colorado Cake Bakers who said no in the face of overwhelming liberal opposition. They inspired people everywhere. There's a little group of nuns who decided they would rather go to court than to be forced to purchase medical plans that violated their consciences. And the little sisters won. There's a group of parents that spoke out at a school board meeting in Loudoun County, Virginia, a few years ago, and they created a movement that is still going now. And they changed the political landscape in their state, and school choice has become a thing across the nation. And I saw it, you saw it, up in Canada. A group of truckers, just a bunch of salt-of-the-earth, over-the-road freight haulers in Canada who lit a fuse that saw results happen in other nations. Look, freedom is contagious. It is. Freedom is absolutely the most contagious, infectious, wide-ranging, system-changing, inherently pleasing, gut-wrenching, viral, liberating plague known to man. And we don't avoid it. We seek it out. And tyrants hate it when we do. Because once it starts, man, freedom, once it starts, whew, it's like a wildfire. So yeah, freedom is contagious. And I'm watching good folks rise up, and I'm hoping that we're about to get into what I would call a pandemic of freedom, where people are saying, we want more and we want the exercise of our rights. Stop standing in the way. There was a recent writing by a pastor that I follow. He got very candid. He said this. He said, quote, "We are in a winner-take-all spiritual war for the soul of America." He said, "The left certainly knows this and has pulled out all the stops. They no longer even attempt to masquerade their attempts at taking over. Winning by persuasion and numbers is no longer their plan. They intend to take over by force, by laws, by intimidation. In their demented minds," he said, "parents no longer have the right to control the education of their children. Kindergartners are supposed to be indoctrinated regarding sexual preference. The fruit of allowing humanistic ideals," he said, "to control our nation is now in complete manifestation. Truth no longer matters, and lying to advance their agenda is perfectly acceptable. The average American," he said, "even those who do not profess to be Christians, shake their heads in wonder, asking, how did we get to this insane point?" Well, that's where we are. And I would add to that that they will attempt to win by also dividing our society. They love to divide us up into little groups, and then allow some of them to intersect, they call it, intersectionalities, intersect while putting the brakes on others. All right, so what do we do about it? What can a constitution-loving, freedom-loving American do or say or commit to that will preserve who we are as a people? Not divided, but equally sharing in the great and wonderful liberties that the founders all felt inspired to put in place for all generations, that people like Samuel Whittemore stood up for, that Martin Luther King spoke out about, that other countries like Israel, Great Britain, just wish they had. Without questions of division, here's the deal. We must be prepared and committed and ready to stand and to speak into our moments. General George Patton, he once told his men, "You must acquire the warrior soul." In a longer quote, he said this. He said, "There's three ways that men get what they want: by planning, by working, and by praying. Any great military operation," he said, "takes careful planning or thinking, but then you must have well-trained troops to carry it out. And that's the working," he said. "But between the plan and the operation," said George Patton, "there is always an unknown. And that unknown spells defeat or victory. It's success or failure. It's the reaction," he said, "of the actors to the ordeal when it actually comes." Some people, he said, call that getting the breaks. He said, "I call it God. God has his part or margin in everything, and that's where prayer comes in." I agree with that. I think it's planning. And I think it's working. And I think it's praying. And those things are going to result to the average Joe and Jane on the street and the leaders of our nation having moments where they have to speak, because we have to speak into our moments. We have to be willing to realize that the words of encouragement or motivation or resistance, those words are actually necessary. And there's never been a time in the human race when the right words said at the right time by the right person didn't also generate the right results. I mean, sure, there's going to be a time for silence, a time for grieving quietly, but when the grieving's done and the mission remains, you got to ranger up. And we have got to get those people going, and you got to gather those people around you. And if you're not able to find the words, that the other people with you will speak into the moment and move you back into action. Call it a kick in the pants, call it reasons to exist, call it a call to action, call it whatever you will. But words matter. And we need to speak them to each other. We need to encourage one another, and all the more as we see the day drawing near, it says in Hebrews 10. Look, I'm thankful for those who have timely added something back to my days that got me out of my funk at times and back on my feet, leaning forward in my foxhole. And here at Right Side Media, we are committed to the ideas that made this state and this nation great. I live in a state right now, I'm speaking to you from Alabama. The motto of our state is a Latin phrase, Iudemus jura nostrae defendere. It means we dare defend our rights. And that's just one state that's part of a vast nation, a nation whose motto is E Pluribus Unum, which means out of many, one. And every single day I get ready for my work to do things, and I like to call it the four E's, that we will educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain as to the principles that make us a liberty-minded community. To give all of you who are listening or watching that added bit of knowledge that you are not alone in this fight. That it's okay to say things like Jesus is Lord and America is great and life is worth living. And that's why I do what I do. This is a fight worth having, y'all. I'm telling you, it is. And we have to be willing to speak into our moments, because the words of others can inspire other people to act, because yes, freedom is absolutely contagious. It is. And we're in this fight together. And there's more of us than there are of them. That's my philosophy.